Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live. We are Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Dave. This is the Hour of Truth. It's Monday night, and it's a Monday night you've been waiting for. We've got a show tonight. We're going to get rolling right away. A little change of plans here. I had talked to my producer, Lisa, who's on the phone right now, about what I was going to talk about, and just in the last 15 seconds, I changed my plan on what our opening was going to be. I hear a lot of despondent noises coming from the grassroots. I hear a lot of dejectedness, Lisa, and people are getting kind of discouraged. And I just want to start off tonight by reminding people of this. On October 24th, Ronald Reagan was 6 points down on Jimmy Carter in the polls. And 10 days before the election, Carter was up by two, and we all know what kind of a victory that was for Ronald Reagan. 10 days after that last Gallup poll was released. So, you know, as I hear people get discouraged, as I hear people get down, I want to try for us to keep our spirits up. I want us to keep in mind that the media is in the tank for Barack Obama. They are, the pollsters even at this point, are in the tank for Barack Obama. Whatever polls do come out are being filtered through this media. And, I mean, you can't even really count on Fox News anymore for a fair and balanced. They've even started tilting a little bit to the right. So I don't want us to get overconfident by any means, because we need to be out there, we need to be working, and we need to be pounding the pavement, we need to be pounding the social networks, we need to be pounding the mail, we need to be pounding the phones, we need to get our vote out there. But at the same time, I don't want people to, you know, turn the news off. Just turn the news off and never turn it back on. Don't turn it back on till November the 10th. Don't listen to any news till November the 10th. Don't listen to any polls. Don't read the polls in the paper. My God, Lisa, I mean, you want to know how in the tank the media is. You know that beginning yesterday morning, and this is not part of the national scene anymore, we're getting back to Missouri, our local newspaper, and you might even have it up there, because is your paper a Gannett?
Is our paper a Gannett? Yeah. Oh, no, it used to be.
Okay. They started a five-part series, front-page series, on how police officers and law enforcement agencies and chemists and drugstores and prescription pharmaceuticals wanted to make sure that we got some control on these prescription on these over-the-counter drugs so that they could quit making meth with them. So see, the media is already being fed by the Englers to get this thing moving, and the legislative session hasn't even started yet, Lisa.
Oh, I know. I mean, I can tell you, the legislators, I mean, we had a little meeting over the weekend, and that whole situation is just, it's being stacked from the word go, and they are all working off of a script, and I can tell you that from absolutely,
so,
without a doubt.
So, I mean, yeah, we have a lot of people in the grassroots. Ron, Carl, who will be with us tonight, Missouri Grassroots Coalition, lots and lots of people to thank for the fact that we barely didn't get that through last time. And then only five senators stopped that with a filibuster. So, you know, it just amazes me. And I don't bring that up as another example of liberalism in our legislature, but it's certainly there. I bring that up as an example. As an example of how in the tank the media is for that agenda. It just amazes me. And so we got there by talking about the polls and where the polls were when Ronald Reagan was behind Jimmy Carter right up almost till Election Eve. And Ronald Reagan ended up taking that election as a surprise to anyone who was following the media. And I don't believe as a surprise to anyone who was in the conservative groundswell doing the on the street work. So don't get discouraged. Stay out there, pound the pavement, get it done. But don't stop working because the media is against you, because the pollsters are against you. But don't give up because the tide is turning. The feeling is there. I mean, it amazes me. It amazes me, Lisa, and I said this National Minute was only going to take a minute tonight, and it's already drug on to about five now, but it amazes me that anyone can even believe that this president is 4 points ahead to 7 points ahead. I mean, you cannot look around America. I don't care who you are listening tonight. You know someone that is close to you who's out of work. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you are. You know at least one person who is near and dear to you who's out of work. You know someone who's getting food stamps who wishes they weren't. You know someone who's gone on disability begrudgingly because there's no other way for them to get money anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what, Dave, and I agree with you. I think people are going to look at the polls, and their credibility much differently after this election is over, because I just do not believe that it's going to be anything like anything close to like what they're saying is going on.
No, I don't think so. And it can't be. I mean, it cannot be. This man cannot be 7 points ahead with this nation in such dire straits. He just can't be.
I will be held accountable. You know, I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
Okay, tonight we've got the debate you folks have been waiting for. I know we've got a lot of listeners tuned in tonight. Everybody's been asking me about this show all day long, and I think that's a good sign. What we're talking about tonight is local control of the St. Louis Police Department. Now, back during the Civil War, for reasons that we've discussed earlier, for reasons you can find in the blogs at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and so we're not going to go into the history. But back during the Civil War, the governor took over control of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. It's been that way ever since. And now some people in St. Louis are saying, we want our police department back. Why have you still got control of our police department? Some people in St. Louis are saying, I don't think that's a good idea. I think we want to leave the governor in charge for this reason or that reason. And I'm very good friends with people on both sides of this issue, some very knowledgeable people on both sides of this issue, and we've got two of them here tonight. Gary Wigert is a police officer. And I think we'll give them each a chance to introduce themselves, so I don't want to get too far into this, but I believe Gary is well beyond an on the street cop, and may not even be wrapped up in some of the problems personally that would affect police officers if this happened, but he is against this. Carl Bearden is an ex-Missouri legislator. And knows a lot about how these things work, what they cost. He was as a Missouri legislator, he was chairman of the budget committee, so he's very aware of what the costs are to you, the taxpayer, to continue to pay a portion of running the St. Louis Police Department, and he's very much in favor of giving St. Louis back. So when you go to the polls now, there's going to be a Proposition A, is going to ask if you want St. Louis to take back control of their police department. A yes vote means you do want St. Louis to take back control of their police department. You want that released from the governor's control, and you want it to go back to St. Louis. A vote no means you want St. Louis to you want the governor to keep control. You do not want that control to turn back over to St. Louis. So there's your yes and no on that. You can go to the Secretary of State site and read the exact language on that. There's some links to that site on Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page and MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. So I'm not going to go into that a lot. What I am going to say is that this is an important debate for you listeners, and it's important because of this. You don't give a crap one way or the other, you know? That's a fact. That's a fact. I'm sitting down here in Springfield, Missouri, and I ain't going to be calling the St. Louis Police Department if someone breaks into my house tonight. I mean, you know, in the day-to-day of my life, it really doesn't matter to me. But you folks out here, where I live, out here, anywhere outside the city of St. Louis, you're going to be asked to make a decision that is going to have an effect on the people in St. Louis, Missouri. And it's imperative for a decision like this that you know what's going on. I mean, you can't just go and put a check in the yes or no and have that kind of dramatic effect on that entire city without knowing what you're doing. Not in a right conscience, you can't. So listen up, pay attention. We're going to have a quick break, and we're going to get right into this. I did send Gary and Carl a list of the questions I was going to ask. This is not like you're going to be seeing next week when the Romney and Obama get up there. This isn't where, oh, I got you on this one, oh, I got you on that one, oh, you win, you lose. This is really a discussion to inform you folks about the very valid issues that both sides have in this thing. So here we go. We're going to do an ad. We're going to come back, and we're going to get right on it. Do not call in, please, because I'm not going to take any calls while this debate is going on. I've reserved a two-hour block tonight, so there will be plenty of time after these guys finish talking for you to call in with questions, concerns, opinions, any kind of free-for-all you want to do about this thing. We'll keep the calls tonight on this subject, though. And if you want to call after we're done, we'll open up the we're not going to have a commercial during the debate. So we'll have the debate. We'll have the discussion. We'll do a commercial, and then we'll come back for your calls. After this commercial, we'll bring on Carl and Gary.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Great, we're back. We're anxious to get going here. I have in the studio Carl Bearden and Gary Wiggert. Gary is here to tell us that he would rather we voted no on this issue, that we not turn control of the police department over to the city of St. Louis. Carl Bearden is here to tell us that we should vote yes, that we should turn the control of the St. Louis Police Department over to the city of St. Louis. Gary, tell us a little bit about yourself in 2 minutes.
Okay. I'm currently a police officer. I'm a sergeant in St. Louis City. Have been for 32 years, and I'm a field sergeant where I wear the uniform, patrol in a police car. And I was also a past president of the Police Officers Association. And I was president 6 years. I was a board member for 14 years. And also because I testified against the local control down in the down in Jefferson City, my testified against local control, I was then thrown out of the union that I was the head of. And so, matter of fact, I'm the first person ever thrown out of the union. And I'm now a lobbyist for the St. Louis Tea Party and have been for 2 years. And I always say unpaid lobbyist, so I know grassroots people get a little fired up on lobbyists. So I always say unpaid lobbyist for the St. Louis Tea Party.
Okay, thanks, Gary. And real quick, when you say, let's just call apples apples here. When you say you were president of the Police Officers Association, to us, that means union, right?
Correct.
So you went from being president of the union to being excommunicated from the union.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
And for all these years, the as long as I've been a police officer, we've been against local control of the St. Louis Police Department because we didn't want city and government interference into our police department.
Okay. Carl Bearden is director of United for Missouri, a very worthwhile organization. I mentioned them earlier when Lisa and I were talking as being instrumental in helping you folks beat back the prescription drug bill earlier in the year during the last legislative session. Carl, tell us a little bit about yourself in 2 minutes.
Well, good evening, David and Lisa and Gary. I'm
How you
Carl
doing,
Bearden.
Carl?
I live in St. Charles, Missouri. I was a former legislator, as David mentioned earlier, served as Speaker Pro Tem for 3 or 4 years, was a budget chairman during the Holden administration when we actually changed some things around and actually did cut the budget during that period of time. And so I've been involved in that process for quite some time. When I left the legislature, became involved in grassroots, served as the first state director for America's Prosperity here in Missouri, and then we started up United for Missouri, United for Missouri's Future, which are grassroots fiscal limited government organizations. We have over 6,000 members statewide.
Okay, I have a set of questions laid out here. As I told you folks before, I brought Carl and Gary in. They've received a list of the questions I'm going to ask. They have not received a list of the questions that I'm going to allow them to ask each other. And there are two such questions from each. Carl has indicated to me that he did not have any questions at this time, but that he may come up with questions as the thing passes, depending on what gets talked about here. And Gary does have some questions, but again, Gary, you're free to change your question or your mind if something comes up during this discussion that you would rather home in on. That's also yours to do. We're going to start now. I didn't want to flip a coin because you guys can't see me. We're all on the phone, and I don't want to be accused of cheating anybody. So what I decided earlier today was that we were going to pick who goes first and who goes last by who called in first, and that was Carl. So here we go. Carl, and then Gary. Carl will answer the question, then Gary will answer the question. There are no firm time limits here. I want to make sure we talk about the issues. So there are no firm time limits, fellas. But don't wander, and get your point in there, and then let's move on. In the grassroots, in the constitutionalists, in the libertarians, in everything that we are, that all of us listeners are, there is a default position. We talk about it with education a lot, but it is just generally a default position that all control possible should be as local as possible. Is that something that we'd ought to maintain here in this vote, or is this an exception to that rule, and if so, why?
Well,
Carl?
Dave, I think that it is important to consider that, and that's the way it ought to be with the police department. You know, as you mentioned, the state took over the police department in 1861 because it represented the largest paramilitary force in the state next to the Union Army, and they were concerned that they would become part of the Union Army, essentially defending the arsenal that's located in St. Louis, and even perhaps even stop the governor's plan to secede from the Union, even though Missouri didn't actually do that. So local control, it was a political issue. It was taken away. It's a political issue. Why it remains out of the hands of the taxpayers of St. Louis City. And it is important that local control is a basic fundamental right and proper function for those people to control. I think it would improve the effectiveness and the efficiency and certainly the accountability of what is happening in St. Louis, and it would lead to smaller government. I know we're going to get into cost a little bit later on. You know, some would argue that St. Louis is overly bureaucratic, and certainly Board of Aldermen is the same size it was when they were nearly a million people, although I would point out that Proposition R is on the ballot in St. Louis City to reduce from 28 aldermen down to 14. But I suspect, Dave, if I were to talk to you about Springfield city government, you might consider there's some bureaucracy there, or at least in St. Charles County. I know the sheriff's issue there is I think, a sign of bureaucracy that's growing in St. Charles County. So part of that perception is correct. But we're talking about one-third of the city's budget, the St. Louis City Police Department. It's about $150 million that they do not control. It's controlled by the five-member board of police commissioners. And so that makes a difference in how a whole budget works together efficiently and effectively. And when one-third of it is essentially beyond your control, you don't get to control very much of that. So conservatives should demand and would demand changes in the bureaucracy, and that's what happened for a long time. You know, I used to be an opponent of local control until I really got to grasp the fact that, you know, this really is an issue for the local people. It's not a state issue. It's a local people, and they ought to be controlling their police department. So I think local control is the right way to go, to step forward and return control of their police department back to the citizens of St. Louis.
Okay. That would be the acceptable answer, I would say, from someone who is a pro on this thing. But we understand that Gary's going to tell us why this particular case should be an exception to the general rule that local control is always best. Go ahead, Gary.
Yes, and I think from a conservative viewpoint, and especially from a Tea Party viewpoint, we believe that control closest to the people is the best control. So we right now have four citizens, all St. Louis City residents, and they, along with the mayor, run the police department. And I like the idea that citizens run our police department versus having the mayor and their bureaucracy, along with the Democratic machine here in St. Louis, running our police department. And it's I think because we've done that, we've been a better police department, especially when you have some oversight from the state. So anytime anyone's appointed, any of the citizens are appointed, we have oversight in the Senate, and they do the approval and the appointments by the government. I mean, the government, by the governor. So our fight right now is who actually makes these appointments. And also, conservatives and liberals both have some input in that, because sometimes we have a Democratic governor and sometimes we have a Republican governor, where in the city of St. Louis we have only a one-party system. And there is no more elected officials anymore from the Republican Party in St. Louis City. Jim Lemke just got his area got moved out, so we have no aldermen, no representative at all who are Republicans. So it's just a one-party system here. And I think that one-party system has really destroyed St. Louis. I think the last governor was, or last mayor we had that was a Republican was 1948. And since that time of 1948, I think our population has dropped about 600,000 people. And so when you have one-party rule, I think that helps destroy a city, and that, in fact, is what has happened. And I don't want that to happen to our police department, and that's what I'm afraid of. And I think that's what other people who are like-minded with me, we're afraid of what Mayor Slay is going to do to our police department.
Okay, that's the end of question one. Question two is going to start with Gary. Gary, as just as local control is kind of a a default position for conservatives, for libertarians, and for constitutionalists. Another default issue is that we don't like anything that smacks of collusion between the union and the government, or business and the government. And just for background, there is some agreement that this needs to be done between the mayor's office, the police union, and Rex Sinkfield, who is funding the pro groups. So why don't you tell us, Gary, that this is not a good idea because of what comes around when union and government gets in the bed together?
Now, here's what happened. The union was up against this, and that was so when I was president of the organization. But what happened to try and get union involvement to support this was a collective bargaining agreement was signed, and inside that collective bargaining agreement was fair share. And for those listeners who don't know what fair share is the taking of non-union members' money, taking it forcefully away from them out of their paycheck, and giving that money to the union. I disagree with that. When I was president of the organization, there were other people who were not members of the union, and that's a supervisors group, that's called the leadership group, and there was a black organization called the Ethical Society of Police. And we had competition, and as a union leader, I thought competition made me a better and stronger leader because I had to meet the needs of my membership. And once you become the only game in town, which is what fair share is, you no longer are responsive to the needs of your members. The deal was cut between, one of the Rex Sinkfield groups and with Mayor Slay and with the union to get the union to agree to support now local control. And, you know, that fight up in Wisconsin, people always say that there were that Scott Walker took away benefits from the union, when in fact he did not. And what he, along with the Wisconsin legislature, did was eliminate the fair share requirements. And that's what the unions tried to recall him on. And so I think fair share is wrong, and I think this is a problem with cutting these type of deals to make everybody happy. Do we really want our union in bed with Mayor Slay and to dictate on what happens with our police department? And one other part of this deal that was made was the right now, if a police officer is charged with a crime or with a malfeasance or some kind of improper behavior, that is open to the public. The media can come and watch the hearing. And I think that's really important to the citizens of St. Louis, that they can see what their officers are being charged with and if they're guilty or not. And as it stands right now under the new law, if you vote yes on this, it will now go to a civil service commission, which is appointed by the mayor, and that is not open to the public. And the only thing that the public will find out is if the officer was guilty, not guilty, or if he received some type of sentence. But I think people should be able to sit in on this, and that's what the media does. It creates transparency, and they can go ahead and allow people to see what their officers are being accused of and if they're guilty or not. And so once you start cutting these deals for local control, I think it's bad for the citizens of St. Louis.
Okay, Carl, the onus is on you on this question to tell us why the grassroots constitutionalists should break their default rule and go along with something like this.
Well, primarily, Dave, is because even if Proposition A doesn't pass, nothing changes in what Gary described. That agreement was between the Police Officers Association and the Board of Police Commissioners. So that's in effect today. And if Proposition A passes, it'll remain in effect for the remainder of its term, and I believe it's a three-year contract they agreed on. Or if it fails, that description that Gary just gave is still going to be in effect and in full force without any recall or anything like that. So it's not an issue. It's really not an issue of Proposition A. That's going to be there regardless. The union negotiated with the state-appointed Board of Police Commissioners. You know, those Board of Police Commissioners are required to be citizens of St. Louis, but there is no requirement, and actually there's no mechanism for them to actually report or be accountable to the citizens of St. Louis. They can't recall them. They can call Jefferson City and ask the governor to try to fire them, but it just doesn't happen in that regard. So that regardless of what happens with Proposition A, everything that you've described and the problem that you've asked about is going to be in place because the Board of Police Commissioners has agreed to that. So really, that's a non-issue, I believe, for Proposition A because it's already in place. Everybody across the state, and why we're talking about this, is going to get a chance to vote on this. Law enforcement officials and elected officials all across the state, as well as in the St. Louis area and St. Louis region, both Republicans, Democrats, and nonpartisans are supporting Proposition A because they get it. They know that local control and the control of their police department is important to the local citizens, and they wouldn't want their police department controlled by the state, and they would agree, over 260 of them right now, are agreeing that that's the best way, and they're supporting and endorsing Proposition A. So the issue of negotiation of the unions with the governmental entity, that occurs in a lot of cities today. That would not change under Proposition A. It doesn't make it any better or any worse. It would remain exactly the same.
Okay, and before we move on to the next phase, let's remind everyone out there listening that again, this is not something you need to, if you've just tuned in, this is not a discussion you need to tune out of. You out there in Chillicothe and in Cape Girardeau and in Lake of the Ozarks and in Springfield and Joplin, you're going to be voting, as Carl just said, on whether or not St. Louis gets back control of their police department. So pay attention here. These are important issues. There are two guys here who are very knowledgeable about this, who make valid arguments on both sides of this issue. So listen up, pay attention, and then decide what you think so that you're knowledgeable when you go to cast this vote. We've reached the point here where the first point where you guys can talk to each other. Gary has a question for Carl. Go ahead, Gary.
Yes, Carl. Alderwoman Phyllis Young stated that local control is the first step to a city-county merger, and she made that when this vote first came up. And do you agree that a city-county merger is good, and do you believe that would be the death knell of the Republican Party if the two would merge in St. Louis County?
Well, the issue of Proposition A really isn't associated with the county-city merger, and, Alderman Young is obviously free to say anything she wants to, whether it is or not. I think the issue on Proposition A is, do the taxpayers of St. Louis City deserve the right to control their police department? So, as far as the city-county merger, I've not taken a position. I've not even really considered or talked about that because that's not what I'm considering when I do Proposition A.
Okay. Carl, did you want to pass on your question right now?
No, I still don't have a question for him.
Okay. All right. It's back to Carl to lead off with this question, and as a past chairman of the Budget Committee, I can't think of someone who should lead this off better. But there's varying claims all through the pros and cons about how much this would save me as a non-St. Louis taxpayer, and what this will cost the St. Louis taxpayers if it's passed. We can assume that at least part of what it costs to run the St. Louis Police Department, I am paying out here in Springfield, and that some of that cost would be deflected to the taxpayers of St. Louis. Why don't you talk to that, Carl?
All right. Well, that's a good question. So it's clear the day-to-day operations of the St. Louis City Police Department are being funded by the city taxpayers. But what we do have is, as non-St. Louis City residents, we do have a portion that we are paying in support of that police department. It's just not the day-to-day operations. Let's talk about the fiscal note for Proposition A. For those who aren't familiar, when a proposition or even a legislative proposal is placed on the ballot, there is a requirement that a fiscal note, how much it would cost, what the fiscal impact would be to be prepared. And so they start with state agencies, and then they go out to local agencies. In this case, it'd be obviously the city of St. Louis, and ask them for their inputs. And the savings that the auditors, state auditor, puts that together for these propositions came up with was $4 million. And $3.5 million of that would be saved by the city through efficiency gains, because right now they have duplicate systems such as separate purchasing, you know, legal, personnel departments, IT, those sorts of things. And so those efficiencies gained would be about $3.5 million, according to, I think, the city's projections, actually. And that's done without losing any police officers and without any additional cost to the city taxpayers, because it's a savings. But, you know, but the fiscal note really does not reflect what it does cost us as non-residents. And I think Gary would agree that there are costs associated. He may not agree with the exact total, but, you know, for instance, there is a certain amount dedicated in the Attorney General's office for defending the city and the police department, actually, for liability claims, and that's somewhere around $150,000. But what people don't fully recognize is that we pay off liability claims against the St. Louis City Police Department because they are deemed by the courts to be a state agency. So all of us, no matter where we live, whether we live within the confines and city limits of St. Louis or in Springfield or in Chillicothe or wherever, we are paying some portion for the liability of our state-controlled police department. And between fiscal year 2006 and fiscal year 2010, they paid out, they being us, the taxpayers, just under $6 million to settle claims against our state-controlled police department. And so during that period, again, fiscal year 2006 to 2010, we paid out just about $6 million. And that actually would have been even more, but the legislature and the city kind of got together and they agreed to negotiate a cap on that. So otherwise we would have been looking at a lot more. So there's a significant cost savings both to us as taxpayers in the state, because that's $6 million plus that we won't be spending over that period of time, and there'll be some efficiencies gained by the St. Louis City taxpayers. So I think Proposition A would work well for all of us.
Well, yeah, and if I could just make a suggestion here as an aside, I would suggest that if Proposition A does not pass, that we maybe should look at a cigarette tax to help fund that liability.
Well, you get to vote on that in November anyway.
So anyway, all right, over to you, Gary, in this cost issue. Do you need me to say the question again, or are you pretty much
No.
Okay.
I think me and Carl, we do disagree on the numbers. There is some cost for lawyer fees and payouts when they win their lawsuits. But I believe it was $3.5 million, and this is Robin Carnahan who put the statement in there, said may or may not save $3.5 million in duplicating of IT services or whatnot. So even there, they couldn't come up with a number. This was something that was floated out there as a way to make this look palatable to voters. And the thing here is, yes, us along with Kansas City, those expenses are paid. And I think if they wanted to in a legislature, I would even go down there and help sponsor it, that the state of Missouri no longer have to pay for that. I don't think the state of Missouri should have to pay for the lawyer fees. Now, there is one advantage to having the lawyer fees done by the state of Missouri. I believe they put a cap on it, and I think they only award damages up to $100,000 through the state. But if you do sue through the city, well, my understanding there is no caps on that, so you could actually be awarded millions of dollars. And especially here where the lawyer influence is much more prevalent here in St. Louis, I'm sure the trial attorneys, and I think we could actually be on the hook, at least city taxpayers, for even more money because I believe it's unlimited. So would we save state taxpayers money? Yes, I think we would. That's something, whether this passes or not, I think that's something we should go down to the legislature and say, hey, you know what, the state of Missouri shouldn't be on the hook for this money.
Okay, Carl, back to you. Now, if I understood what you said correctly, this is a court order that the state pay this liability. Am I right?
Yeah, there's a long, I mean, it's not just one. There are a whole boatload of court cases that have demonstrated or found, rather, including all the way up from circuit courts, appeals courts, to the Supreme Court, that have said because the state appoints the Board of Police Commissioners, the St. Louis City Police Department is a state agency. And so it's not just one case. It's a number of cases, and some of them are still fairly recent. And so that liability accrues to the state, and you can't get rid of it. There is a sovereign immunity clause for both the state and and the city, it's actually $300,000. But there are ways to get around that, and they get around it with the state, and they get around it with the city.
Okay. Gary, are you in a position to argue that $6 million liability, four-year $6 million liability number with Gary with Carl?
No, I didn't. I didn't know what that full number was. I do know me myself personally. I've been sued for millions of dollars in the performance of my duty. And those were, I believe, matter of fact, I believe every one of my lawsuits that I was sued, I believe that was settled by the city, if I'm not mistaken. And what happens is the city has attorneys on a retainer, so they can do that essentially I don't know if retainer is the proper word, but they have them on staff. And so essentially they can do that with no cost to the state taxpayer, and that's probably what they should use, because I've had city councilors defend me on my lawsuits.
Hey, Gary. Gary, just so you know, I've been sued for millions of dollars, too, but probably for different reasons than you.
Okay. Just so you all know, I have never been sued. Okay. Well, all right. That's so there, you know, when I was talking to someone about this just today, and I'm going to be honest with both of you guys and all the listeners, I am still way up in the air with this. I talked to Carl, who's a good friend of mine, for quite a while one night, and I came away from that talk very much in favor of this thing. I talked with Gary, who I consider a pretty good friend, and I came away from that talk pretty well against this thing. And you know, part of that is this up in the air about how these numbers go. So you folks out there who are listening to this, key in on this and get out there and do some Google searching. Find out what these numbers are, and that's because this is an important part of the issue to you folks in outstate Missouri. I mean, it's really a matter. This is probably the only effect that this thing has on you in Cape Girardeau or in Carthage is money. So this ought to be the most important, or at least an important consideration for you. I wouldn't say the most important, because if you're grassroots, you're back to question one and two for what I think is really most important. If I was sure that this was not a good thing from a constitutionalist libertarian point of view, I probably would pay a couple of bucks to keep it with the state. All right, Gary, we're at the second breaking point. Did you have another question for Carl?
Let's see here. No, I don't have anything right now.
Okay. All right. Gary, you're down in the police department on the day to day. Would this passage? Let's assume this passes, and control is returned to the city of St. Louis. In your mind, would that have any effect on the quality of service and protection that the people in St. Louis get?
In regards to the bill that was passed, or the bill that they're trying to pass, there is no mention in there how this is going to improve police work or do anything better. And I haven't seen anything in that way. Now, one of our problems is retention of good police officers. Now, We are paid a lot less than the surrounding police departments. And the only reason that we, instead of going out to Chesterfield or one of the surrounding areas to work as a police officer and make a considerable more amount of money, is the pension. And that's one of the big reasons that we work here for less money, is because of the pension. And I am seeing, in fact, a number of officers are applying for different police departments in preparation of that. And what I'm also afraid of, too, is the politics involved. I mean, will we now be holding to all the aldermen and mayor and everyone else involved in city politics when it comes to doing our job? And believe me, we have enough interference as it is when we do our job. And so I'm afraid that this will lead to more interference. And I think it's going to have a tough effect on morale, as I believe more people will leave just in anticipation of this.
Carl, pick that one up.
Okay, I think first that citizens are getting a mixed bag with their state-appointed board of police commissioners. You've had some good ones, and I think Gary would agree. For example, Chris Goodson was a great commissioner. But that's not always the case, and so you get a very mixed bag of who's running it. And so I think this helps even that out. by having a more consistent appointing authority. The tax now, if you want to make something change, so if I'm a resident of the city of St. Louis, I can call the mayor, but he's only one of five people on the board. I could call a board member, but, you know, they can blow me off just as easy as anything else because I never vote for them. I can't recall them. So who's that leaving me to call? It leaves me to call the governor's office. And so good luck with that. So there's no direct accountability. And again, you know, one third of the city's budget is this police department budget. And so how do they effectively control, how they effectively become more efficient in our total budget when they don't control one third of it? So how does it become more effective? I think by bringing it all back in together, that Proposition A would improve the quality of service. Because look, I don't think anybody's ever said that there are not dedicated men and women in the St. Louis Police Department. They're a high-level quality. I've talked to a lot of them. Gary certainly has a lot more experience in that area than I do, but I've never met one yet that was not professional, courteous, and who I didn't trust to do a job. But I think the quality of service of the people of St. Louis can be increased by increasing that accountability and efficiency by taking it back to the people and to the people's elected representatives there in St. Louis. And so it's a very important job. It's important to note that no cop is going to lose his job from Prop A. Now, there's a protection in there that there's no layoffs. There's nobody can be fired because of the deal. There's protections in there. Gary mentioned the issue of being influenced. The very first two sections of the statute dealing that Proposition A actually would adopt deals with retaliation, with influencing, and has some very good and strong penalties in there. Gary also mentioned the concerns of the pension and how great the pension plan is. The pension plan does not change under Prop A. The board changes from a 10-member board to a 9-member board, but the pensions themselves stay exactly the same. The policemen that are currently, like Gary, he's still covered under that after Proposition A passes. The people who have retired are still covered under it. The widows are still covered under it. The orphans are still covered. Everybody who is under that system now stays under that system. And so I think bringing this back home to the citizens who are paying for it and to their directly elected representatives who then are responsible for making all those appointments would be the best way to improve accountability and efficiency of the services.
Okay.
Hey, Dave, go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, please.
If I could just interject one thing.
Right.
I think when people want to call for help or need assistance on something, I think they should call the police department itself. And they can talk to me directly or someone else in our district, the captains, the lieutenants, the patrolmen on the street. That's who you want to talk to for police help. You don't want to call a politician when you need a policeman. And I think that's something that we need to put out there to the listeners, that just calling your mayor isn't really going to get you help because the mayor's never caught a criminal, and he's never made any neighborhood safer. I think you want to call the policeman on the beat and get him to do that. And that's how I think it's a little closer to the people when you have, instead of a complaint going to the mayor, down to the chief, down to the captain, down, you know, all the way down, you want to call directly. And we have that access right now. We have our public relation guys in each district, and we have our captain who's accessible to all the neighborhood groups. And people can go through the neighborhood groups and contact the captain. So I think that's a little better, and it saves you a number of levels of bureaucracy when you want to talk to the police.
And actually, Dave, Proposition A wouldn't change any of that. That would all remain into place. But when you start to get above just the issue of the neighborhood deals or whatever, you still need someone to go to who has overall authority, and Jefferson City is not the right place to do that.
Okay, I want to divert a little bit now, and feel free, either one of you, to say I'm not prepared to talk about that because I didn't put this in the proposed questions, but it's come up a couple of times tonight about how one third of the St. Louis budget is funds the St. Louis Police Department. There's no argument between the two of you that is a approximately firm number, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and that St. Louis citizens have no control over this. So now, Gary, when the union goes to talk to someone about wage increases or benefits or pension changes or needing new cars and new computers, do they go talk to the city or do they go talk to the state?
Right now, when we need any benefit, we go to the state and try to get that passed in the state. And I think I was very successful getting things passed. But what we have is with the Hancock Amendment, that basically makes sure that there's no unfunded mandates upon the city. So anything that we get passed, the city previously could come up and say, hey, you know what, we can't afford that, and we're not going to pay it. And Carl probably remembers, I would come down there and I'd get a 6% pay raise passed, and what we would get would be actually a 2% pay raise. But I don't mind that, and that's the reason Hancock is there, so that way none of these unfunded mandates are placed upon the city. So that doesn't bother me. But now, the way they're set up through this collective bargaining agreement, the Police Officers Association did get a step increase passed through through the collective bargaining agreement, and the city had honored that.
Okay, good enough. Do you have anything to say about that, Carl?
Well, again, the collective bargaining agreement is going to be there with or without Prop A. So voting for Prop A does not fix the collective bargaining agreement, and it doesn't hurt it. And what Gary's talking about is correct, although I believe I don't want to put words in his mouth, but you know there are negotiations between the Board of Police Commissioners and the city about how much money is going to be spent. And in some cases, the city has willingly gone above what they would be required to do under the Hancock Amendment. And actually, there was a court case in 1980, which is still a very gray area, that theoretically, from that point on, from the time that Hancock was passed, the city would have to pay what they were paying in 1982 or whenever that case was. But they've gone beyond that. So that's always a gray issue out there. But they've also negotiated Board of Police Commissioners, city. If Board of Police Commissioners wanted $5 and the city only gave them $3, you know, the Board of Police Commissioners will go, great, we'll go lay off, you know, 20 officers. And that's the kind of negotiations they get into.
Okay, so what I was trying to get at is the reality of who controls this one-third of the money. And so the union goes to the police commissioners, I'm taking it now, and says, we need a $80 a year clothing allowance for every officer. And someone in the state says yes or no, or someone in the city says yes or no?
Well, as it is right now with the new collective bargaining agreement, they can put that into the contract, and there's really nothing once this passes. Now, right now, they can still reject it because they say, hey, we're still under agreement to Hancock, and the Hancock state law supersedes the collective bargaining agreement. But once this agreement, if this in fact passes, then the collective bargaining agreement will what determines what the city pays or what it doesn't pay. And I'm really afraid is my pension being placed into the collective bargaining agreement. And not only do I fear that, but a lot of policemen fear that, because I'm afraid they will trade away our pension increases and our widow's increases and whatnot for a pay raise, because sometimes people fall for the immediate satisfaction.
Okay.
And so,
well,
yes, I'm very afraid of this passing, because then the collective bargaining contract.
Okay, let me just stop you both, because our last question, which is next, is specifically about the pension and how that works. So we're gonna get into that. But what I want to nail down right now is the answer, I believe, is state. If the union wants some new thing, the person or entity that says yes or no is the state and not the city.
That would be essentially correct.
Okay.
And it will remain that way, though. I disagree with Gary's assessment. It will not change under the passage of Proposition A in the new statute. Matter of fact, it actually protects everything he wants to protect. Hancock is not a state law. It is a constitutional amendment, and it applies regardless of whether it is the state or whether it is the city, and it covers everybody. So it doesn't really matter whether it's the State Board of Police Commissioners or the City of St. Louis. Hancock applies equally.
Okay, so nothing, yeah, but let's not even talk about anything that would get into Hancock. Let's say the police union gets together and says, we want $40 per officer to pay for coffee while they're on patrol, and we're not going to be getting into Hancock currently. That the yes or no on that negotiated point would be made by the state, And if this passes, the yes or no would be said by the city. Am I right?
No, that would be done through the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay, it would be done through the collective bargaining agreement, I understand. But that collective bargaining agreement that adds that $40 in is currently done between the union and the state of Missouri. Is that right?
That's correct.
And if this passes, it would be done between the union and the city of St. Louis?
Correct.
Okay, that's where I wanted to go. What I wanted to do was get down to this. It is true that one-third of all of the money that St. Louis spends is being controlled by the state right now, is being spent, appropriated, and controlled by the state.
No.
Okay, so...
The city of St. Louis, they control the purse strings.
Okay.
So basically what this is enabling legislation. So they are allowed to do that, but they do not have to do it. Just like when I explained, we would go down there for an increase in, say, our pay raise, mm-hmm. and that enables them to go ahead and pay us that amount. Now,
right.
If they do not have the money, they control the purse strings, and they say, hey, we're not going to give you the money for that issue. So they don't have line item veto, but they can pull back money when they look at the budget and say, we don't agree with that, we don't agree with that, and we strike that off.
And here's what happens, though. The Board of Police Commissioners said, okay, you're not going to give us that. We'll just switch money around, and we'll do this that we want to do, and we'll just, say, lay off some police here or whatever. So the state-appointed board does still have control of how they spend the city's money. It's just the city does have the ultimate control about what the total bottom line might be that they're going to give.
Right.
Okay.
And we've never laid off a police officer ever.
Well, I don't think, in all fairness, I don't think that's what Carl was saying, but he was saying that decision
right.
would be made by someone appointed by the governor and not by someone appointed by the mayor today. Okay, now let's get into this pension thing, because I mean, and I save this for last because I know this is absolutely huge with you guys out there, Gary. Tell us what the problem is that you see coming down with the pension and how that's going to change when this thing passes.
Right. What happened was we had $800 million in our pension in cash assets. During the crash in 07, that worked its way down to $600 million in cash assets, but that's still a very strong pension.
Well, talk to
and
me
we
about
feel like
talk
we,
to us. I mean, us folks out here in Springfield now, $600 million doesn't mean anything to us. Talk to us in terms we can understand. Like, what percentage funded is that?
I'm not sure. We were at one time we were like 94% funded. I'm
wow.
sure we're a little bit lower than that, but I'm not sure what the exact number is.
Okay.
And here's what happens is if you're when times are good, like for I think 13 or 14 years, the city didn't contribute anything to our pension. They got a free ride on that. Well, now they are contributing money, and it's a substantial amount of money, but now they're contributing money, and they didn't put any money away for anticipating this problem. So this is the problem with the city now crying poor because times are tough. And, yes, we do need to amend something to help with the pension, some type of averaging so that when times are good and when times are bad, the city can set their budget. And that's probably something we should change so the city can set its budget and set some type of median average we have probably over the last 20 years. And that would relieve the city of some of the burden. The other problem we have right now is the fire department, and their pension is in worse shape than ours. But what the mayor has done is he's set up a separate pension system, and he's trying to circumvent the current pension system. And I believe that once he accomplishes that with the fire department, and they're under state guidance too, just like we are, I believe he's going to do the same with us. Now, I know it says that your current benefits are protected in state law, but it doesn't say your future benefits are. So you can set up a separate pension system and basically defund the system. And I don't think most people know it, but when we have an officer who's shot in the line of duty, it doesn't make any difference if he's been on 30 years or 30 days. The pension system is what picks up the cost. We have 125 police officers that have been injured in the line of duty. And if we set up a separate pension system for these young guys, where is that money going to come from to pay for them? We had a police officer, he was shot through the neck. He had 30 days on the police department. Our pension system is picking up that tab, but that's what this pension system was for, were these type of injuries. And I'm afraid if we go into this separate pension system that Mayor Slay has proposed for the firemen, then I think we're going to have trouble financing these officers who are injured in the line of duty.
Okay, before we move on to Carl, I want to make sure that we all understand what you're talking about here when you say this separate pension system. Be a little bit more specific on what you perceive is going to happen with the pension system if this passes.
Well, right now we have state oversight, so we have some conservative involvement into that pension system, protecting
okay.
it. If it goes to the city, we will lose that. Now, what the mayor has done is he set up a matter of fact, this story is interesting, too. Instead of using city lawyers, he hired the law firm of Thompson Coburn, paid them $250,000 of my taxpayer money when he could have paid lawyers in his office for nothing, and they set up a system where we have a second pension system or pension fund for the firemen. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to put them into this other fund and get out of the state oversight of the current pension system. And in return for that $250,000 of taxpayer money, he received a $40,000 kickback for his campaign for mayor. And this is what I'm afraid of. This is the type of politics we don't want interjected into our police department. I mean, in the future, if they buy a gun or a vest or a car, will it be contingent upon donating to Mayor Slay's campaign? And this is the type of soft corruption that I deal with here in St. Louis all the time. And I think this is wrong, and I don't want that in our police department.
Okay, I can certainly understand that, but now I'm a fireman, and let's talk about something that's actually happened here, because
sure.
what we're trying to do is project a real life case onto the probability of what's going to happen down the road should Prop A pass. I'm a fireman. I've been with the fire department for 28 years, and I have two different pension plans working now.
Yes, they're trying to set up a separate pension system and pass through the city. But right now they are suing, which is another thing I'm paying for the attorneys to try and sue our firemen through my taxpayer dollar. And they are suing the city, and I think the ruling was kind of half and half. I think this is going to probably go on. Most of these lawsuits go on for about 4 years. And the firemen are actually suing the mayor over setting up the second pension system.
So I'm a fireman. I've been a fireman for 28 years. I've been in this pension that's managed by the state trustees for 28 years. What has happened to that pension? Is it taken away from me now?
No, I don't. Well, if they set up the second pension system, it will be taken away from you. I don't know if they're going to just run that money out of that system and contribute to the new system. No one knows.
Okay. All right.
And this isn't just for new hires. In fact, I heard Mayor Slay say he needs to change not only the police pension system, but the fireman pension system at our neighborhood meeting. And he said not just for new hires, but even for active hires.
Okay, Carl, take that one.
Yep, it's Proposition A, Statute 84.346, says any police pension system created under Chapter 86, which is what Gary's talking about, exists today, will continue to exist and will continue to be under state control. So the description he gave of the fire pension is not the same as this Proposition A statute language. It very clearly protects not just those people who are retired, but current people who are on there now and will always be a state police. In order for anything to happen to this current police pension, they would have to come back to the legislature and get the statute changed. Otherwise, they cannot change the pension for existing folks in there now or whoever comes on the system in this particular pension plan. They cannot change it because it's protected by this bill. The board is the same, except that they have changed the number of 10 down to 9, but all the other language, all the other functions of the board that the state has controlled for all these many years is still exactly the same, and they control that pension process by the state and provide those protections, I believe, that Gary is most concerned about. And I understand he has a concern. Everybody is concerned about their pensions, particularly today, because as we know, particularly pensions like this police pension, you won't find those in the future. But this one is protected by state statute, and the only way that it gets changed is for the state legislature to change it. They've even put belt and suspenders protections into the statute, specifically in Section 84.344, subsection 7, where they make it extremely clear that anybody who is currently retired or on benefits, such as widows or orphans, will continue to get that those same benefits and everything else that they've been entitled to and is operated under Section 86 will continue on without interruption. And you know, it's the city, I would not doubt, would like to save some money, but this statute prevents them from raiding or doing anything with that pension fund.
Gary, do you agree with that, or do you see some problems with that statutory language? Or
right, the firemen
where are you
have
at?
Their protections too by state law, but it's being circumvented by Mayor Slay, and he's telegraphing his punches. But he can't do that to us right now because he wants this proposition passed. But I know, and plus he wants to be reelected, and if he takes on the firemen and the policemen at the same time, that may cost him election. But he's obviously telegraphing his punches. He's doing that to the firemen, and he in turn is going to do that to us. This is basically, he's testing the waters. And everyone told him, even the president of the Board of Aldermen told him this was illegal, what he was doing. And he didn't care. He pushed forward with it, got it passed through the Board of Aldermen, and now we're going to be spending more of our taxpayer money locked up in court on this for the next couple of years. So I know that they were doing this to the firemen first, and they're going to do that to us next. And even though that they're protected by law, too, that doesn't make any difference. And here's another problem, too. If this goes to state court, we have a chance of winning. If this goes to city court, which are appointed by Mayor Slay, I guarantee you these cases are not going to be won.
Okay. That's all my questions. I want to give you. I've got like 20 minutes left here of the time we allotted just for the debate. So, Carl, take up to 10 minutes to wrap up.
All right, well, you know, but really to put it pretty simply, Proposition A is local control. I do believe it's just a pretty common sense, good government initiative. St. Louis is only one of two cities, the other being Kansas City and the whole country, for which their taxpayers don't control their own police department. And so 70% of St. Louis voters in a non-binding referendum in November of 2010 said they wanted their police department back. You know, the Civil War has been over 150 years. I think it's time we gave the police department back. But for those who are listening who are not in St. Louis, I mean, think about your city police department. Think about your sheriff's department. Would you want the state to come in, take over that department? Oh, by the way, you still get to pay for it. We're just going to tell you how it's going to be run. We're going to make all the calls for you. And you can't call your city mayor or your sheriff anymore because he's not in charge of making those final decisions. It's somebody in Jefferson City that's doing that for you. So I just don't believe that that is a conservative, principled way to approach this problem. You know, Gary and I first met when I was in the legislature. As I said, I was once an opponent of local control because I did see that, as many legislators, even today, would see it as a way to try to leverage St. Louis City into making some changes that people outside of St. Louis City want to make. And if you kind of get down in Jefferson City, you kind of get surrounded by this egg or something, and then you think, you know, that's a good idea because they're not going to do it on their own. The problem with that is that we are self-governing, particularly on the local level. St. Louis City is a constitutionally created city, not within a county. It has both city and county functions. That's part of the bureaucracy because they have two court systems. Because they're also a county, they have a circuit court, and because they're a city, they have a municipal court. That's part of the bureaucracy that they have. But that is all part of city control. You know, there were city amendments proposed a few years ago. Citizens had the right and the ability to change their charter. They chose not to make those changes. Come in November, they are being asked to reduce their Board of Aldermen. Again, that is their call. I think they'll do it. Gary may have a different opinion, but I think that they'll actually do it because even the Board of Aldermen are supporting it, and they're the ones that put it on the ballot. You know, it's about a fundamental conservative principle of giving control of the police department back to the people who are paying for it. And so I don't think it's really a good idea for Jefferson City telling people of St. Louis City how the department should run. Gary brought up the specter of corruption, and he gave us a very specific example. First off, city attorneys are not pension experts. They may address some pension law, but they are not experts enough to establish a pension fund. And I'm not saying it was a good idea or a bad idea to do what the mayor's proposed to do, but that's why he had to go outside. But Gary cannot produce to you any evidence of his so-called soft corruption, that it was a quid pro quo, because if he can, it should be in front of either the circuit attorney or Richard Callahan, the federal district attorney, because I guarantee you Richard Callahan would be glad to have his picture taken with Mayor Slay and the head of Thompson Coburn putting them in cuffs for corruption. It's either there or it's not.
So it's either
real or it's not. Investigate it. Take it to the attorneys, particularly the Eastern District Attorney, and make it become real for people. Don't just talk about it and accuse somebody of it without being able to actually prove it.
Okay.
Is that my 10 minutes already?
No. Please.
Well, Proposition A, specifically, as we've talked about, it does protect the pensions. It protects the pensions for people who are there now. It protects pensions for everybody who is retired now. It's written into the law. It's protected by the law. That was one of the big goings on, back and forth. That got settled, and that's it. You know, the issue of the collective bargaining, I don't like collective bargaining agreements. I think they're an atrocity. I would agree, Gary and I probably do agree, on the fact that the state ought to have a paycheck protection law that would prohibit any employer, whether they be public or private, from withholding union dues from someone who is not a member of the union. That's the way it ought to be, or at least the political portion of it. And so I would agree with that. But that collective bargaining issue that is so problematic will be the same the day after Proposition A is either defeated or passed. It will not change with the defeat of Proposition A. And so, if you want to talk about those changes or you want to talk about corruption, there's plenty of corruption on the police board. You know, the former police chief, who I saw at breakfast the other morning, by the way, got this really nice golden parachute to retire over a towing scandal in which his daughter was partly involved. That was under the state-controlled police board of commissioners. There was one commissioner here a couple years ago who was fairly new, so maybe he just didn't know what his boundaries were. But he used his, I'm the board of police commissioner guy, get out of jail free card to get his nephew out of jail because he had been arrested. If you want to talk about corruption, those are real examples, real life examples of corruption that can be proved. The Civil War began over 150 years ago. There were issues. Political issues, only political issues that caused the St. Louis Police Department to be taken away from the taxpayers, from the local government, from the local decision makers. Political only, no other reasons. It's time that the state gave it back. So control of the city police department was a political act. We can return that now by our vote, and a statewide vote. So conservative principle, local control, I think it should prevail. I think that the people of St. Louis should retain or get back the control of their police department. Again, almost 70% of them said they wanted it back. They told the legislature they wanted it back, and they should have it back. So unless you think it's a good idea that the state should control your local police or sheriff's department, I'd encourage everybody to vote yes on Proposition A. And if they really want more information, they can go to safermissouri.com and get more information.
Okay, thanks, Carl. Gary, before we get started on letting you wrap up, I want you to address this thing that Carl said about, because this has been a question with me, that 70% of the people in St. Louis want this to happen.
Yes, and what happened on that was a non-binding referendum. But in fact, what that was done was to make review boards was basically why the majority of the people wanted this passed. And now, in fact, the majority of people do not like this because it has made it less open, and now it goes to the Civil Service Commission. When people voted on that was never in play. When this backdoor collective bargaining deal happened, that was never in play. But what happened is everybody's getting a piece of the pie, and I think the citizen is getting left out. So now you have the ACLU, who's against this, Eastern District of Missouri. The NAACP is against this. You have the Retired Officers Association is against this. You have the leadership, which is the supervisors, against this. You have three Tea Party groups, St. Louis Tea Party, K&N Tea Party, and Jefferson County Tea Party. We have numerous, you have the St. Louis City Central Republican Committee, the St. Louis County Central Republican Committee. I have 8 to 10 different townships that are against this, and these Jefferson County Pachyderms are against this. So this is a coalition of conservatives and liberals who are against this, because what happened is these individual groups are getting upset as people are cutting deals to make this happen. People do not like these deals that are going on, mainly the collective bargaining agreement and also the way officers will be fired in the future, because it's all now secretive. So people do not like that, and that's why there's groups that are mounting up to be against this. So I think that's a good coalition. And when we say that local government is the best government, I beg to differ. I've lived in the city of St. Louis for 55 years. I do not think this is good government here in the city of St. Louis. So I think government by the people is better, which is who these citizens are who are appointed, and not government by a democratic machine and by a corrupt union. And that's the problem. This isn't named in the legislation, this backdoor collective bargaining deal, but this was the result that they were given to get them to switch over. So if we're going to give the police association collective bargaining with binding arbitration and fair share, I think that needs to be pointed out to the voters that this is why, in fact, they support this. And these are the trouble when you have different entities coming in and getting people to support their position. And I think this is wrong what's happened here, and I think the citizens of St. Louis will not be served well. Now, in regards to who pays for our costs, I don't think most people know this, but there are over 80 policemen who are paid for by federal money, federal grants and federal money. In fact, we had 35 who were paid for by stimulus money. So most people don't know that, but it's your state, it's your federal money that is going to run the police department. And if you're going to pay for it, then you should have some say in it. Now, at some point, if the city of St. Louis rejects these 80 police officers and rejects all your taxpayer dollar, then maybe the city should do what it wants. But I guarantee you, it will falter and fall apart. And in regards to tax money that comes from St. Louis County pays a lot of taxes. They fund different things like the Dome, Ballpark Village, which is also funded by the state, and the Muni tax, and not the Muni tax, the Zoo tax, and there's a bunch of things that St. Louis County pays for. And I think they should have some input in this. And that's why the governor appoints these folks. Now, if we're going to talk corruption, look what happened in Kansas City. They had local control, and during the Prendergast years, they didn't like what the police were doing out there. They were using their influence to influence elections. So the state took that away. Now, if we're going to talk about what's unfair, Kansas City was not included in this process. So they have the same agreement we have with the same lawyer fees and the same costs, yet they are not included in the progress or in the process. This is something that was started on just as by St. Louis. And I think St. Louis Mayor Slay has compromised the local control issue, because we as conservatives and Tea Party people, we like that term, but that in fact is what's not happening here. So I ask you, if you're against corrupt unions and a corrupt city democratic machine, then I ask you to vote no on Prop A.
Okay. Can anybody else hear Gary? Am I the only one who's
ahead,
lost
Carl.
Gary?
No, I
think
okay.
You, Carl?
Yeah. There he is. Okay, no, it's me. Yeah, it's Dave. Okay, listen, I'm going to open up the phone lines at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. But I want to throw something back to Carl here real quick. Carl, Gary ran off a pretty long list of names of conservative groups who are in favor of this. What's going on there?
Well, actually, he read off a long name of Republican groups who are against it. The ACLU is not conservative. The NAACP is not conservative. The Republican groups would be more conservative about that issue. But, you know, there's over 260 people across the state, law enforcement people, a lot of Republicans. Matter of fact, I'm trying to find there are more Republicans in support of this than there are Democrats, because they do understand that, St. Louis City people may have made some bad decisions, and they might elect people who are not Republicans, but it's still their choice to make. And you know that as far as federal stimulus dollars, if that's a reason we should have it, then we should take over your police department and your sheriff's department, Dave, because I can guarantee you, you're getting federal money down in Springfield at Greene County.
Right.
So that's not a reason for the state to maintain and take over a principled issue of local control of the police department.
Okay, now I want to throw this one back to Gary specifically, because twice in your summary, Gary, I heard you say that we should favor this because we should favor government by the people instead of the Democratic machines. And my question to you is, if I'm not mistaken, St. Louis works just like Springfield. I mean, the fact that Mayor Slay is sitting in the mayor's office is a government by the people.
Right. Now, I also, too, believe that cities are empowered by the state. To me, they only receive their power that is granted to them by the state.
Okay.
And that's my understanding of it. So when the state steps in and says, hey, you know what, you are doing a terrible job of this, we need to step in, just like we do with our school system. I mean, I don't see anybody putting out a vote that the school system goes back to the local control. Now, no one can tell me there that local control is, in fact, better for our schools, because they're terrible. So, I mean, I have to put up the argument there, and I got distracted on what question you asked me, to tell you the truth, Dave.
My question is, you know, if you're saying that I should care about this down here in Springfield because St. Louis is not because I should think that St. Louis should be governed by the people, and it's actually being governed by the Democratic machine, and it seems to me that the people of St. Louis are the ones who put Mayor Slay in.
But look what the people of St. Louis didn't have any influence. They didn't have any influence in this collective bargaining deal that was manufactured outside. They didn't have any influence in the agreement that was signed in the collective bargaining deal. They didn't have any influence now of officers being fired, because now that's no longer open. So I think the citizens are the ones who are being shortchanged in this. And these are St. Louis City citizens. So I think the citizens are the ones who are coming out behind in this deal. I mean, just because things are local doesn't mean they are better. And I was part of – I was a volunteer with GOPAC, which was Newt Gingrich's his group, and he believed local control was from the federal government to the state, not from the state to the city.
I understand that. I understand that. States are the power units. Cities are not the power units. But still, all in all, I mean, I down here in Springfield get to tell my police department what to do. So I just was trying to equate what you said. You know, you say that there's something politically corrupt about the Democratic machine in St. Louis. It doesn't seem to me like it's my place to do something about that.
Right, but what can I do as one police officer to try and stop the what can I do to try and stop the flow out of the city of St. Louis? There's nothing you can do. There's a reason why people have fled the city of St. Louis, and it's bad government, I think, is the main reason. And they don't feel like they have any input. When you have four citizens on a board, they have input, because it's government closest to the people is best. And I think citizens are better than the Democratic machine, and that's my opinion on that.
Okay, that's fine.
But David, yes. The board that the mayor would appoint are still citizens. And the fact of the matter is, you know, a group of four people in this case, appointed by the governor, who is 140 miles away, is not the same as government by the people, by the city, who is paying for it. And so I understand Gary's point would be, Slay will appoint, you know, his people. But every member of that of that board of police commissioners right now belong to Jay Nixon. He's appointed all of them. And unlike Jay Nixon, the people can, and you heard Gary mention earlier about his concern or speculate about Mayor Slay's concern about taking on both police and fire at the same time. He does have to be worried about getting reelected. And so people he appoints to oversee the Public Service Commission or whatever the charter, St. Louis Charter provides for to oversee the police department, are directly answerable, and Slay has to pay for those decisions.
One other thing, too, that I am really worried about, and this is a residency requirement, and Carl knows because I was down there in his office all the time asking for help on this. If the city gets control, the city charter forces us to live in the city of St. Louis. So we had to go down. Thankfully, Matt Blunt was able to change this with his appointments to the board, which upset a lot of folks down here, and that's why a lot of them wanted to go to city control, because they were upset that the police board changed, that now police can live in freedom wherever they want and can't be forced to live in the city of St. Louis. And the city charter says that we will live in the city of St. Louis. So if they get this changed, I guarantee you that will be a huge fight, and that will lead to a lot of our police officers leaving our police department when they're forced to move back into the city.
Actually, there's a provision in the statute here that keeps the residency open after, I think it's 7 years of service. So it's not totally closed. And as Gary knows, I mean, one of the residency issues was one that I felt very important about. However, as I looked at it again, you still have to go, that's what the city residents, the city voters even renewed that call just a few years ago, that that's where they want their police officers to live. If they're going to work for them, if they're going to employ their police officers, they want them to live in the city that they're protecting. But this statute, if it does pass and there's a Metropolitan Police Department established, does allow for police officers, I think it's after 7 years, if I find it here, to be able to reside wherever they want to.
And here's another problem. If we're going to let people in the city of St. Louis vote purely on numbers, we are going to be voting a lot of stuff that is going to be bad for the city and bad for the area. I mean, there's a reason we're a republic and not a straight democracy. And if we are going to participate in votes here in the city of St. Louis purely on democracy, on a straight yes or no vote, they are going to be voting themselves a lot of things for their benefits and not for what's best for the people of St. Louis.
Well,
so I don't think that should be open to a vote of people, that they can say, hey, we want our police officers to live in the city of St. Louis. And by a straight yes or no vote, they can do that. And I guarantee you may have protections in there, but once they pass that law here in the city and their city control, that is going to be changed.
Okay, well, I'm going to wrap right there with that. And I want to thank Carl and Gary. You're both welcome to stay to field any calls we get, or you're welcome to go. I don't see any calls yet. 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I'm going to give callers 10 more minutes to call. I mean, we're running. I reserved a big block of time over our normal time if you folks want to call. But I'm not going to use that time just to hear myself talk. So if we don't get any calls, I'm going to wrap this thing up in 10 minutes.
We could threaten them and tell them Gary and I would have to talk for another 10 minutes or something.
But listen, I want to.
You put a dime in us, either one of us, we keep going.
I want to take that 10 minutes after I thank you both to say to the listeners out there who are still hanging on. I think tonight was great, and I think it was great for two reasons. I mean, I think it was great because you folks out there, you need to know this issue. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it 10 more times between now and November. This is important for you to understand because you are taking a vote that affects the city of St. Louis. It affects Gary at work. It affects the people who live on the streets of St. Louis that Gary sees every day, and it affects you to a minimal degree. So know this issue. But you know something else that's important that happened here tonight that I want everyone to pay attention to, because I go around to circles, I go around to tea parties, I go around to groups, I do the social media thing, I listen to people on the radio, and I am concerned about the lack of civility that is starting to enter the conversations. And I'm not just talking about this issue. I'm talking about the big issues. And I want everyone to pay attention to what's happened here tonight, because there's Carl and Gary. I know these guys are familiar with each other. I believe these guys are both good friends. There's me. I consider myself a friend of both of them. I believe both of them have equally valid takes on two different sides of this issue. And this kind of civility and open discussion of legitimate issues is what needs to go on in this country. It's what needs to go on in this Tea Party / conservative movement. It's what needs to go on all over the political arena, but especially on our side of the political arena. The last thing we can do is start dividing ourselves with acrimony and name-calling when all of these issues that we're discussing have valid sides from all different angles, and there's no reason that we can't all sit down and talk about them just the way Gary and Carl talk about this issue right here. I want to thank you guys for coming along and for having this discussion with us tonight. I think it's important, and I appreciate both of you.
Hey, thank you very much. Carl, nice chatting with you. Lisa, Dave, thank you very much for having me on.
Same here, Gary, Dave, Lisa, we appreciate it. And, you know, Dave, I think it's important that you provide this opportunity to people, because, as you say, people aren't may not be paying attention to it because it's got St. Louis in the title. It does affect them, and just thanks for making that available.
Sure, sure, and thank you both. I'm going to go ahead and put you both on muted mic now, but and I'll be watching to see if you stay around. Feel free to stay around if you want to.
I'd like to listen.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Lisa, what'd you think of all that?
Well, you know, I don't think it changed my mind. I'm still going to vote against the issue, but, you know, it's a good debate and, good, like you said, good arguments from both sides. I have issues, you know, I have trust issues, Dave, you know, and Gary, I think, made a really good point about the corruption issues, and I just, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in the fact that Jefferson City statutes will protect the issues the way that Carl believes that they will protect them. And you know, and one question that came up that I was thinking of right there at the end with the police officers, they just fought, I thought, not too long ago to be able to not have to live within the city limits of St. Louis. And after seven, you know, I don't know how that you're going to recruit a lot of young officers to want to come and live in the city of St. Louis for 7 years, you know, once people start, you know, that attrition thing, I think, is going to be a problem. And I think you're going to have a big deficit in your police department if you're going to require people to live there for 7 years before they can live somewhere else.
Well, Lisa, I certainly understand that, and I certainly sympathize with that, and I think that's a powerful, powerful argument. But the other side of that fight, again, is I have some problems with the way the Springfield City government is run. I have some problems with the big gay agenda thing that's going on down there. I have some problems with the smoking ban that's going on down there, and I don't go to the rest of the state of Missouri and say, "Come fix this for me."
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but the entire situation was set up in the first place because the larger municipalities are corrupt. You know, they were corrupt in Kansas City, and they're certainly corrupt in St. Louis. I live in the St. Louis area, and you know, I don't believe that this isn't going to be a slippery slope into things further down the way. And you know, there are a lot of people waiting, you know, in the wings that really want to see this, and I do see this as maybe a slippery slope into city-county merger, which I think would be a bad thing. And I have some questions, you know, why is someone like Rex Thinkfield, what dog has he got in this fight? He always worries me because he's always pumping big money into things and over issues, and I think that's an issue as well. I don't trust that situation. So whenever I see a Rex Thinkfield pumping money into a situation, that throws up a red flag for me as well.
Okay, and I understand that, but now let's be fair and get our own agendas out here. You're pretty pissed off at Rex because of the way he's treated education, right?
No, I am not pleased with Rex because I don't think, I mean, I look at him as the George Soros of Missouri.
You know, I mean, he's a brilliant man, and he's got more money than God, and he can buy his way through his agenda, through legislators. He's given money to probably every legislature in Jefferson City, every legislator in Jefferson City, to, you know, to further whatever agenda he, you know, wants. And I don't see that. I see that as a corruption builder. That's my issue. You know, and Rex has had his hand in education, and Rex has had his hand in a lot of other areas. And when you filter that kind of money into a legislature, that does nothing but build corruption in my mind.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and I agree with you there to a great extent. But then, I mean, let's not be the pot or the kettle here. The Koch brothers do the same thing for our side, don't they?
Well, I think they do and they don't. I mean, they got their hand in education and other issues as well. And you know, one thing that I see about these big money funded guys who seem to be, you know, on conservative issues, you know, they're on conservative issues today, and then they're on other issues as well. So I mean, they're brilliant men. I mean, they're not rich for no reason. They fund certain issues and throw you a bone every once in a while that makes the conservatives happy, while at the same time they're funding something else that, you know, might not look so good. So it's really hard to call the kettle black, you know, when they're throwing you a bone every once in a while that makes them look good. So, you know, brilliant strategy. You know, they've got the money to do it. They can work it any way they want. I don't think that, and just because they funnel money into these, you know, a few conservative issues, doesn't mean that they're either all bad or all good. But I do find it suspect.
No, and I'm with you, Lisa. I tell you what, I am really, really torn on this. I really am. I mean, I am so into, you know, and something Gary said that I don't agree with is, you know, well, we're not looking for more local control in our education. What would happen there? Well, hell yeah, we're looking for more local control
right.
in our education.
I think if you had a chance to ask him again, I mean, generally speaking over educational issues on a general topic, yeah, you know, of course local control. I mean, I've talked to Gary about this, so I know.
Yeah.
But of course local control is a good thing. But in the city of St. Louis, it's a disaster.
Well,
because of the corruption in the city, and
right.
I think that just punctuates his point, because it is absolutely, that city is not run with the best interests of the people at heart. It's a political machine, you know, targeting the money. I mean, that city education system, it was a public works project. It had schools open with half the number of students in it just to continue to keep people on a payroll that didn't need to be there. So, you know, and do you think if you look at the education system there and see how well that was run, are you seriously going to turn the police department over to that system? I don't think so.
Well, you know, and those, I think those are exceptionally valid issues. It rubs me wrong from the get-go to believe that we'd ought to be voting against as local control as possible. But I certainly, and that's what I mean. That's where I mean I'm torn. I mean, I certainly understand each and every one of these issues as well.
This is like the Prop E situation. This is about ballot language, you know. I mean, this is an issue where, you know, on the surface, you know, you absolutely, local control is always a good thing. And I don't think Gary or Carl or anybody would disagree with that statement. On the surface, local control is always good. But you need to look beneath the surface and see what it really means. You know, the ballot language can look great, but what's that really going to do beneath the surface, and what are the underlying issues? I mean, I'm going to be talking on Wednesday about some of the ballot issues in St. Charles County, and it's the same deal. You know, you've got a city council or a county council working on some initiatives where, you know, on the surface it all sounds hunky-dory, what's it going to do to your freedoms if, you know, unless you look at the fine print?
Well, and that's exactly my point, Lisa, and again, I'm not arguing with you. I'm trying to state both sides of this issue here. I understand what you're doing in St. Charles County. I've been following that quite closely, and I admire your action on that, by the way. But if you lose, are you going to come to us out here in Greene County and ask us to fix it for you? Are you going to dig in deeper and fight harder?
Well, you know, you got to consider the demographics of the area you're dealing with too. You know, the demographics in the city are different than the demographics in the rest of the state. And you're not going to get people, you know, in the city to dig in and do that kind of work. you know, and to fight for the freedom and liberty of the Constitution as the way it's supposed to work. It's just not, that's just not what you've got dealing with there. So you have a whole, you have a whole demographic there that, you know, there's a lot of people living on the dole of the government.
Absolutely. No, I understand that. I understand exactly what you're saying. But my take now, personally, on let's expand that whole thing. My take is that if government, if President Barack Obama gets reelected in November, then this country gets exactly what it deserves. And I'm going to fight like hell for the next one until the day that it occurs to everyone that there isn't going to be a next one, which is likely to happen if Barack Obama gets reelected. But I'm going to fight until that day to fix it. And I'm not sure that the
Because you're going to be on the government dole then, Dave.
Well, I'm on the government dole now. You know, you taxpayers are paying me every month.
And you know, it's only going to get worse if Barack Obama, that's the case. I mean, I think that's part of the deal. I think, you know, you're either, this is a situation where you're either bloating the bureaucracy or you're not. And you know, same thing with Barack Obama. I mean, he may win an election because he's, you know, the left has successfully bloated the bureaucracy to the point where we've got enough people on the dole to want to keep it bloated. I think
right.
If you know, and the reality is, if you want to change things in the city, you got to keep the government from being more corrupt. And I think that's what this police issue is. Why are we giving them more fuel to add to that corruption fire? You don't want to do that.
Okay. So then, somewhat like the judge plan that 36 of the other states adopted, you think we probably got our finger on something here in Missouri that we probably should export to, what, Chicago, New York, New Orleans, Los Angeles?
Are you talking about the choosing of the judges, changing the...
No, I'm suggesting that like we exported that to the other states, are you suggesting that St. Louis, Kansas City, the only two cities in the nation who have a metropolitan police force controlled by the state, are you suggesting that this is so good it's something we could export to other big cities?
Oh, no, I don't think it's good at all. But I think until you solve the problem of the corruption in that city, I think you got to do something to keep the bleeding from, you know, hemorrhaging.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a valid argument. That's all I'm trying to do is elicit all kinds of valid arguments here tonight, and we haven't had any callers, so you and I are going to sign off, and I sure appreciate this candid talk you and I had as well after Gary and Carl finished. I sure am glad Gary and Carl came along. I enjoyed, and I want to impress on people out there one more time the civility. Of this conversation, and we need more of that. My God.
Wonderful job.
Yeah. So, Lisa, thanks. Thanks for coming along. Okay. Thanks for helping out. I love having you along on Monday nights, and I look forward to Monday nights with you on the air. Next week, if you can make it, we'll spend more time together. But I thought this was important to get in. We're going to, in the next several things, on Monday night specifically, spend our entire time on the other ballot initiatives. I mean, we've talked a lot about candidates. We've talked a lot, and for most of us, those decisions are made, the candidate decisions. So what we're going to talk about, we've got four very important ballot measures. This Prop A that we talked about tonight, and we'll talk about off and on again between now and November. We still got Prop E to talk about, and we've talked about that quite a bit because of the ballot language issue, but that's the insurance exchange issue. We've got Amendment 3 we haven't talked about a lot, and we're going to spend some time on that in the next couple of weeks, and that's what Lisa and I were alluding to a moment ago, but that changes the way that judges are selected in the state of Missouri. Supreme Court justices, appellate court judges, and in St. Louis and Jackson County, and any other county that wants to, their circuit judges are chosen that way. And then we're going to talk about Prop B, the tobacco tax, massive increase in cigarette prices because of an added 90 cents tax to every pack of cigarettes, every pack or every carton. I don't remember, but I'll know before we talk about it. But it's a huge tax increase, and it's not all about smoking. So we'll be talking about those things. And you'll be along on Wednesday, won't you, Lisa, with that culture vigilante thing?
Yes, I will, and I hope you'll join me. We've got a good lineup. We'll hear from Ed Martin. We're going to hear from Ray Cuneo again.
Ooh.
And we are going to talk a little bit more about the ballot initiatives that are going on in St. Charles County and what is the fine print that people need to know.
Good. Boy, that I like that Ray Cuneo guy. He is smart, isn't he? He has really got this agenda Agenda 21 thing down. I mean, and I need to be talking to somebody like him because that thing is just so confusing to me. I mean, I know it's hurting us. I know it's out there. I know it's a bad thing, but I mean, just all the little spider web, little tentacles of that thing just really boggles my mind.
Yeah, we could talk to Ray Cuneo every week for, 10 years and probably not get half the information that he has in his head.
It's
just frightening. I mean, this is just the most devastating thing that could happen to our country besides allowing Barack Obama a second term in office.
Well, I mean, the two go hand in hand pretty much. And then on Thursday, our newest addition to Missouri Grassroots Radio and a very inspiring, entertaining, and educational program has come along for Thursdays. The Hillbilly Logic with Kevin Harned, and I'm really looking forward to that every Thursday night. Most Thursday nights, because of my schedule, I haven't been able to get along to actually participate in that and or hear it live. But I join many of you, I hope, who don't catch shows live at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, clicking on the MGC radio button in the top and going to Hillbilly Logic, clicking on the various shows and listening to his podcast. You can do that with any show that we air, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday when we do the roundtable. You can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can click on the various shows, the Hour of Truth, the Culture Vigilante, the Hillbilly, or the roundtable. You can see what's coming up on those shows. And you can listen to any show that we've done in the past, just by clicking on the synopsis of that particular show. I encourage you to do that. One more thing I want to get a plug in for, and then we're all going to go. This Secret Santa thing. Lisa, we're falling a little bit behind. We were doing well there for a while. We're falling a little bit behind in the Secret Santa. The Secret Santa, as most of you have heard Lisa say, night after night, is a program that we're trying to get rolling here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We did this last year. We only came into existence the first week of December last year. And right away, someone said, we need to do something to bring this scattered group of people. I think we had 55 or 60 people, together for a common cause. And someone said, Secret Santa. And so we put out the word, and we gathered just in that weeks before Christmas, we gathered $250 in small donations, and we took that out to a couple of large stores, and we used them to pay off. We went in and talked to the manager on Christmas Eve when we were sure there was going to be a problem for these families, and we said, give us a family who has toys in layaway that they're not going to have paid off by Christmas morning, by tomorrow morning. And we paid those off. And we were able then, totally anonymously, to make sure that two families who would not have otherwise had any Christmas for their children were able to provide the Christmas that we thought their children should get. Not that they were entitled to it, because we're not about entitlements, but that we wanted them to have. Conservatives, constitutionalists, you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your country to get involved in programs like this, because we're the ones out there every day, brothers and sisters, saying we don't need the government to do this for us. And by God, if we're going to preach that message, we better make sure that it's getting done outside the government, don't you think, Lisa?
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. And, with the Obama administration and their agenda, I think that it's very important for us to realize that, charity is being taken away from us. The ability for us to have charity in this country is being taken away. This is a very small way that we can fight back and keep that alive. So I would agree with you, Dave.
So do it. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa button. You can use PayPal. You can write us a check. There's an address there. You can drop us a check or a money order. I would put cash in the mail. But you can drop us a check or money order. You can use PayPal. There's a button right there to do it. Give us a dollar, please. Give us $2. Give us promise yourself that you're going to give us a dollar every time you get paid between now and Christmas. Encourage your kids. I mean, you know, this is something you could use with your kids. We'll take 50 cents from little Mary or little Frank's allowance if you want to try to teach your children that this is a way to get involved with people that they don't have a clue who they are and that they just want to help out of the goodness of their heart. Please don't make your kid do it, okay? But encourage them to. Encourage them at a very young age to get involved in these kind of things because that's what's going to save our country. And I'm not saying that this Secret Santa is going to save our country, but the attitude that if we want the government out of this kind of thing, then it's on us. That's what's going to save our country. So do it. Do it. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Please, please, please give us a dollar or two and help. Our goal this year is $500, twice what we did last year, for families. So it's not a huge goal. $1 from everyone in Missouri Grassroots Coalition would get this done. And I'm going to tell you one more time, I say this every time, but every penny you send in is going to these toys. There's no overhead, there's no salaries, there's no gas money, there's no anything. Every penny that's sent in is going to these toys. There will be $0 left in that account on Christmas morning. Every penny will have gone to this cause. So do it. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, $1, $2, Secret Santa button, PayPal button. Do it tonight. Before you forget, I mean, don't say I'll do it tomorrow. You'll forget. Do it tonight. Lisa, it's great. It's great. It's great. I love this cause. I love Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I love Missouri Grassroots Radio. I love you and Kevin, Terry, and the whole gang. It is my honor to be part of your organization. Thanks for coming along.
Back at you, Dave.
All righty, that's it for tonight, folks. Be sure and catch Lisa Wednesday night on the Culture Vigilante. Good night from Missouri Grassroots Radio, the Hour of Truth.
God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.